I'm here in the Merida Town Square in Yucatan, Mexico. We've got a lot of people here. It's a Wednesday afternoon. It's December. Hustle and bustle. A lot of noise. Birds are everywhere. People like to come into the downtown squares here and sit and talk, have lunch. I'm here on a tour through Casa Akin and Illuminati Tours out of Canada, and we've gone to sites of the Olmec, sites of the Maya, like Palenque, and we're looking for a place to sit. I'm here with Dr. Richard Jelicic. Hello, Richard.
Hello.
And we're looking for a spot to sit and talk about our tour and some of the things that we saw. We'll walk here towards the middle of the square. It's a fascinating place. It's not like the American squares. This is really in the urban areas people like to come and get out in public. We didn't see any drug runners on our trip. We saw no decapitations. I think a lot of the news in America is grossly exaggerated. So, you know, on our last week, Richard, we saw the big heads of the Olmecs. We went to many of the sites where the Olmec sculptures are kept, and we talked about the Mayan culture, excuse me, the Olmec culture, which is considered the mother culture of Mexico. It's the oldest one. And could you share some of your impressions of the Olmec culture, what you thought about who they were? Because they still are somewhat of a mystery, aren't they?
Well, like many of the things that have been found archaeologically in Mexico, I think we're just barely scratching the surface. You know, the Olmecs were called the silent teachers because they didn't leave behind any glyphs or any writing. Most notably, these large stone heads weighing up to 30 tons each or more. And the teachings are that the Olmecs received the responsibility to carry on the level of consciousness from the Lemurians and from the Atlanteans. So they were a group of people who carried a very, very high level of consciousness. And I believe that, like I said, most notably that the stone heads that have become iconic are keepers of wisdom, that there's much more there than just a pure lump of stone that has been carved. I believe that those have been used to hold energy.
How do you mean hold energy?
Well, in other words, as one would use a religious device, let's say, and they use it in a ceremony, and it begins to hold the energy of what that ceremony represents. But more importantly, that the way that they were to construct it, I believe they're used as energy devices, that people did meditate and pray and did ceremony, and that along with the understanding of ley lines, grid lines, things of that nature that surround our planet, that these Olmec heads were placed in specific areas and that they were keepers of wisdom. So I think it's really, really far beyond just simply looking at a mammoth piece of stone that was carved into the shape of a head.
Yeah. Well, of course, all of the stone heads that we saw were in museums, or they were at La Venta, which is a large outdoor park, but they were all placed there because Pemex discovered them in, I think, somewhere in Tabasco region, the state of Tabasco, when they were doing the oil explorations, and they moved them all to protect them. So we didn't really see any of the Olmec carvings in their original sites. But besides the heads, which are what people think of when they think Olmec, the big, huge heads, and these are huge, folks. These are, what, 6-7 feet tall? They're big. They're mammoth. They all have headdresses on. They look like specific individuals. But there were also a lot of reclining Olmecs in very specific positions, like they were yoga positions. It strikes you that they clearly intended something. It wasn't just a random statue. They clearly intended something. You remember the one that we saw called El Negro? Because for those of you who are not familiar, there are theories that the Olmecs came out of Africa. They clearly have Negroid features, African features, and there's some suggestion that at one time, long time ago, 10, 15,000 years ago, that maybe Africa was closer. This is one of the theories we heard, that the continent was closer. Or the other possibility is simply that people you know, knew how to travel on the ocean. They knew how to travel on boats.
Exactly, that ancient cultures were really far beyond what we tend to think of them as, you know, being simple people with, you know, religious and traditional types of interaction with each other. But I think they were much more sophisticated than we understand.
Yeah, yeah. And what was your take on the reclining Olmecs, these big pieces of basalt? They're clearly larger than life size, and the ones that were, looks like they were laying on their belly with their head looking up to the sky. A very strange posture.
When I was looking at them in the museum, I found them to be very cryptic. In other words, like as you meditate on something that doesn't easily yield the fruit of what it really means. So I think that's what is meant by the silent teacher. So when I look at the images, or rather the carvings that you were talking about, is I felt that they were coming forth. They were holding something, the way they were carved, they were holding something in their hands, but they were coming forth with teachings. Kind of like as one travels from one place to another and you have information with you, you're moving, you're traveling from one state of being into another. And I look at it as the birthing of the new era or the coming of the new age. So they, to me, when I meditated, they had that iconic representation. But also, like I said, the silent teachers, what I got from them was that it's like planting a seed. And when I meditated, it is like I received a seed of information, but that would grow within my awareness. So on the face of it, I was a little bit frustrated. You know, in my conscious mind, I'm thinking, I should be able to get something right away. This should make sense. And what I found with these, especially with the Olmec carvings, is it didn't work like that at all. And that it takes some contemplation, some time, some integration before the message really takes place. So it's the way consciousness is, right? It's on such a high level, or such a higher level, that we don't immediately understand its meaning.
Right. I should point out to everyone listening that the leader of our travels was Miguel Angel Vergara, who was a director at Chichen Itzan for many years. But he would be not your standard anthropological or archaeological instructor. He was really looking at the metaphysics and what might be the spiritual underpinnings of a lot of these sculptures. But when I looked at the Olmec sculptures, well, let me put it this way. If everything was destroyed in the United States and you had some gas stations left and you had maybe McDonald's left, you would draw a certain conclusion about who the people in the United States were. These gas station devices and these golden arches. And of course, you'd be so far off if that's all you had to judge by. Now, the Olmecs are one of the oldest cultures. Is it, I think, as much as 3000 BC, some people say.
I believe so, yes.
And so all that's remaining really is just stone. There's a few ceramic pieces here and there. Quite a few enigmas still about the Olmecs. I would encourage everybody to look into it and still have an open mind. At a place called Tres Zapotes. We were at a place called Tres Zapotes. We had to go through the countryside to get there. Then there was this wonderful caretaker in the museum who interpreted a lot of the sculptures.
Don Manuel, yeah.
And I'd have to say, I was there with Yi Foon, who's a Singaporean friend. We were looking at the first flat relief carving to greet us, and we both thought, look how Egyptian that looks. It had an Egyptian look to us. And then, oddly enough, there was one large head, and on the backside there was two rows of glyphs, which looked like the Mayan glyphs. And Don Miguel, was his name?
Manuel.
The Don Manuel, he said, look at this little section here. This says Yud-Heh Vav-Heh in ancient Hebrew. Now, I know what Yud-Heh Vav-Heh looks like in modern Hebrew letters, so I did copy it down, but it did bear a striking resemblance to that. And I'm going to check that out with some of my other sources. But what is your take on that? Wasn't that fascinating? Why would the Hebrew name of God, Yud-Heh Vav-Heh, the Tetragrammaton, be found in on the backside of an Olmec sculpture, of all places?
It's not the first time that carvings like that have been found. There have been several instances of carvings of bearded white men showing up in Mayan architecture. And it just strikes a pose as, well, if these are really Mayans and this is before the age of intercontinental travel, how did it come about? And so when we look into what is called astroarchaeology, which is the study of ancient civilizations, you know, we find there's a lot of anomalous information that comes forth that suggests that the people that lived in past civilizations, and I'm not just talking about 10,000 years ago, I'm talking about 20, 50, 100,000 years ago, that they were indeed far more advanced than any of our cultures that are alive today. So the instance you're talking about that we saw in Tres Zapotes is one of others that have been found, suggesting that a bearded white man,
or many,
had in fact visited Central America and had in fact interaction with the people of Central America at that time.
Yeah, well, in fact, in I believe it was Tres Zapotes, or it was Tuxtla, there was a museum that had little figures that the average person looks at it and says, that's a Chinese person.
Santiago Tuxtla Museum.
Santiago Tuxtla Museum, yeah.
Yeah.
So let's jump ahead a little bit. We went to a lot of Olmec sites. We also went to Palenque. And I must say that I was really blown away by Palenque. Palenque is where Pakal-Voltan, is that my saying it right? Pakal-Voltan? Pakal-Voltan, he was the ruler. He was buried, and most people, who have no knowledge of Mexican ancient history, they've seen the big slab that covered his grave, which Eric Van Daniken described, thought was a spaceman pushing pedals and things. But it's actually the image of Pakal-Voltan with the Tree of Life, which is a universal symbol in all cultures, growing through his body, showing his connection to the underworld, and that he's ascended or become one with the gods. And we saw an exact replica. I was amazed how large that carving is. It's not a little thing. It's huge. It's still in the temple basement, if you will, at Palenque now.
Yeah, the replica you're talking about was in the museum that's adjacent to Palenque. And to look at this massive sarcophagus lid, you would wonder how indeed they even moved it. And of course, you know, one of the things we now understand, of course, is that the sarcophagus itself was built first, and then the entire pyramidal structure of Pakal-Voltan was built around it. We found...
Which is amazing, folks. I mean, what he's saying, first off, this slab... it's huge. What is it, like 6 feet by 20 feet, maybe? It's pretty big. And then this is what all the archaeologists believe. There was no way they could have brought it in to anywhere. They carved it on site. And then this whole massive, complicated pyramid was built and constructed around the tomb of Pakal-Voltan. It's an amazing architectural feat. You know, in school, I just want to make an insertion here. We have everything we learn in school is wrong for the most part, or misleading. We have this impression that Native Americans were these primitive people. They grew up scratching sticks in the dirt, foraging every day, and that the longer you go into the past, the more primitive people are. It seems like nothing could be further from the truth.
I agree.
I mean, you had the Spanish coming here and then discovering Palenque and these other cities, and were just absolutely blown away. One of them said, there's nothing like this in Spain. Of course, there weren't many people there anymore in Palenque. They were all gone. That's another mystery. But Palenque, if you've never walked there, it's vast. The architectural undertaking, the mathematical undertaking, the engineering undertaking, the teams of people to build it, the planning, the spiritual significance, it really far exceeds any of our abilities in our society where... The god that we worship is money. Everything is commerce that determines what we're going to build. What's the bottom line? It's a totally different world that is vanished. That's just, you get a slight glimpse of it when you go there. What other impressions did you have, Richard, when we were in Palenque?
Well, I wanted to go back to the sarcophagus lid for a moment.
Okay.
As an indication of how advanced the culture of the Maya really were, there's a book written by Maurice Cotterell called The Mayan, The Tutankhamun Prophecy, And what
Tutankhamun, which was one of the kings of Egypt?
Yes, and what Cotterell did is he was able to take a very good photograph of the sarcophagus lid showing Pekalvotan, and then he traced it pen and ink onto paper, and then he would make a clear acetate of it. So basically you had a clear piece of plastic with just a pen and ink drawing of the lid. And so he made two exact copies. He laid one exactly on top of the other, and then just shifted one just slightly.
As in like rotating it?
Like Jodie Foster in Contact, when
okay.
she had the primer and
okay.
she rotated one over the other, and they found an entirely new set of symbols, the jaguar god and the bat god. So think about it, if you, well over 1,000 years ago, were designing a sarcophagus lid that had these hidden messages in it, but you had no access to computers or to copy machines, you'd have to have a pretty evolved, multi-level, condensed way of thinking, extremely efficient to be able to put these hidden symbols in a sarcophagus lid. Plus, someone who would come along, who was an archaeologist perhaps, or someone smart enough to think, well, maybe there's more to this lid than just simply what we see in a single picture.
Okay, so the lid of the sarcophagus of Pekalvotan, they did a tracing, put a clear tracing over the, in other words, a tracing of all the engravings, put one over the other, and then they rotate it, and all these new, okay, so you're rotating like one, maybe clockwise or counterclockwise, like we're the middle.
Just a few degrees.
So, now, these new symbols, this isn't where you have to squint and turn your head a funny way, and you can kind of pretend that symbols are there, these are actual?
No, I don't think so. The book that Cotterell wrote has plates that are full-color plates, and it's pretty clear what you're seeing.
Interesting. Yeah, so there's mystery after mystery. Now, I got a book when I was in Palenque, which was a total mind blower, and this was a theory that I'd never heard before. We talked about this a little bit, and it was describing the authors wrote a book called Maya Genesis, which I don't have yet, I intend to get, but their book was showing the connections between the symbolism of Copan and Palenque and in India. The Indus Valley and the all the carvings, and I actually was surprised when I read the book, because if there was one little thing that they said is similar, you could dismiss the whole thing. But there must have been hundreds of similarities, and the authors clearly stated that this can be no coincidence. For example, they start with the name of the town Palenque, which is a form of the language spoken in India, which means we got a little bug on us, which had to do with the, I forgot what they call it in an English term, but it's like a carrier where four guys will carry the king around. And that was called a palenque. And then the little corner engravings, they have some of the floral designs, the lotus. I remember even seeing an elephant in Copan or Quirigua. Which, why would that be there? And some of the wheeled toys. So you do have some connection, and this author purports that you had major Buddhist oceanic travel, probably starting 1000 BC up until maybe the 3rd century AD. And, just something to consider. I think there was a lot more cross-cultural contacts than we like to believe that go way, way, way back.
And we're still finding more and more all the time. You know, it's easy to take a look at these buildings, these magnificent structures, and just be in awe with the mere architecture itself. But what we're finding is the more we study, the more aware we become of how synchronistic, how symmetrical, how integrated all of the architecture is, one building with another, each building with a very specific purpose, a very specific setting. Buildings also incorporated sacred geometries. They also had respect to ley lines, grid lines, vortexes of the earth. And we're also finding that where there are structures under these structures, sometimes waterways the water is channeled in very specific directions underneath these structures, caves. And for instance, in Guatemala, satellite imagery reveals only 2% of those structures have even been unearthed. And so
2%.
2%. There's so much more that you and I will be finding in our lifetimes that talks about the depth of this culture. And of course, part of your point being that this culture had achieved a level of consciousness that is still unparalleled, especially when you consider that the Mayans had 20 calendars and only two of them were related to space and time. The others were related to the development of consciousness. They had the most exact calendrical system that has ever been developed.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of the reason which brought us here to Mexico in the first place, is this idea that one cycle of the calendar, the long count, comes to an end, and then another one begins, but it comes to an end this December 21st or December 23rd, depending on whose correlation you accept. And one of the things that the author brought up of this book about India and Mesoamerica context is that the Indians had something had something known as the Yugas, their way of counting time. And they spoke of the Kali Yuga, or the Dark Age, that we're in right now, which not everybody agrees with this correlation, but the end date of the Kali Yuga is not, according to certain numbers, is not that far off from this year. I'm not sure how many years it is off. Oh, the beginning date, anyway, of the Kali Yuga was just a few years. So when we speak of the long count of the Maya calendar, it's like something like 3,115 BC, give or take. I don't remember exactly. But that's approximately when our Kali Yuga began. I think it's off by about 7 years. So the authors think that's not a coincidence. I mean, there were certainly no Maya in Mexico 3,000 BC. So it was, people wonder, where did that date come from? And, you know, I do see in these studies, rather than be worried about the purity of one, the so-called purity of one culture over the other, I think we've got a blending of universal symbols that people have become too exclusive in their thinking about. You have the cross, which is everywhere, means different things to different people. It's amazing the amount of symbols that are totally cross-cultural. Even there's Buddha-like symbols here in Guatemala and Mexico that are just uncanny. I remember in one of the Olmec statues, the guy looks like a Buddha statue. Yeah. And you wonder where that came from.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about the Yugas, because different cultures had different ways of looking at what is the 26,000-year cycle, which is what the Yuga looks at. And the Mayans, they also had a 26,000-year cycle, but also when astrology looks at the Yuga, astrology divides it into its 12 signs, which, by the way, the Mayans counted 13 constellations, not 12. And the astrological signs are divided in about 2,200 years each. So you had three cultures, the astrological, the Greek, and the Indian, all looking at this Yuga, or cycle of time, 26,000 years, in different ways. So from India, they would have the Kali, the Dwapara, the Tritya, Satya Yuga.
Now, you know what those mean, but explain them for us.
Well, just basically, they are names given to the eras of time. Kali Yuga is the one you were referring to, which is the era of the least amount of consciousness.
That's what we're in right now.
Well, my understanding is that we've just entered into Dwapara Yuga, so...
Which it is the Bronze Age, and there's a Silver Age, and there's a Golden Age.
Right. So, yeah. So the Greeks would call it the Iron, Bronze, Silver, and Golden Age. And so, I guess what our point is here is that we're looking at cycles of time that the Mayans knew discreetly, intimately, and that the people of India, the people of Greece, many cultures knew about these cycles that had to do with levels of consciousness. And, of course, the good news is that we're in a cycle now that is in the upswing, so things are improving, if you will, that we have the opportunity to become much, much more conscious, not intellectually aware only, but much more conscious.
We keep observing the incredible, really scientific achievements of the Maya, and yet we were discussing this earlier, that if you neglect the fact that there was a heavy spiritual component to the entire culture, at least what's remaining that we see, you really don't have a clue what the Maya were all about. And I know that your work is to teach people to learn how to take charge of their thinking and take charge of their lives. So if you read the newspapers, sometimes I feel it's not very encouraging. You read the news in the world. So the idea that we're on an upswing would have to represent the concept that it's an opportunity to change your ways. I suppose people always could do so, but sometimes it's very difficult in certain ages when the bulk of the people are holding you down. They're too materialistic, too money-driven, too pleasure-driven. So, but things do change. That's the kind of the point of this, and we each have to individually change. That's why I've been doing my show. It's just to teach people there is always hope. There is something you can always do in your own life, and civilizations come and they go. We make our choices and we create our destinies. So, tell me what else you were thinking at Palenque in terms of how it might relate to us.
Well, you know, we 7 billion people, we all are exposed to this higher level of consciousness. It's you, it's me, it's the person down the street. I just wanted to add a little bit to what you were saying, because there's a phrase in the Bible that says God is no respecter of persons. And to me, what it means is, imagine you and I and 50 other people go stand out in the market square under a beautiful sunny sky. And the sun illuminates all of us, but what we choose to do with that sunlight is up to us. And so I think the reason we find, like you and I, we really wanted to come on this journey to visit Palenque and the Olmecs and so forth, but we are exposed to the sunlight of these teachings, of these cultures, of their cosmology, and what we do with that sunlight, that's up to us.
That's right. Just being exposed to it is not enough. We have to make changes in our thinking and in our actions.
So we live in...
Starting to sound like a preacher, aren't I?
Well, we live in an age where we have an opportunity to make what we call the inner transformation or the shift. The problem with words like that is they get trampled because they're overused and the meaning is lost. But it doesn't change the fact that the sun is shining now, that we do have the opportunity to shift our consciousness like never before, and that it's up to each one of us to empower ourselves to make good decisions, to in fact live in that higher level of consciousness. So, yep, the sun is shining, but each one of us uniquely has work to do.
Let me bring up a kind of a related but separate point. One of the things that I've read about when I studied cultures like Cahokia in the United States, which was also a vast culture that's largely unknown, and some of the Mayan centers, is that when people try to ascertain what happened to them, they think that it was a top-heavy theocracy that demanded more and more from the people. And that may be true to some extent. It may not be true. But to the extent that it might be true, it suggests that the demise of some of these cultures might have been that each individual was not as self-sufficient as they could have been, despite the great advances. A civilization can still fail. We know that they have. So I always tell people, try to think small in the sense of leaving, you know, the term is the term that's popular these days is a carbon footprint. You can live your life, recycle, save water, save resources, grow food. Regardless of your circumstances, you could live your life and take little steps. You don't have to do everything at once, but move in that direction to be a self-sufficient individual. Then if there are problems, which there inevitably are, you're better off. And so, I'm not at the point where I'm thinking I have to emulate everything of the Mayans, but I certainly want to emulate what was good. Some of these teachings and some of these images that I've had interpreted are totally incredible. They're just totally contrary to what you think, who you think these people were. The vastness of the spirituality. And you know something, Richard, I see connections between almost all religions. I see connections with Christianity, with Judaism, so it's no surprise to me when I see in Buddhism, there's no connection, no surprise to me when I see these symbolisms as if people understood the meaning of life. They tried to incorporate these messages, secret messages, if you will, in their art. Our purpose is to evolve spiritually, to become one with God. And how do we go about that without getting caught up in cultism and words, you know?
Well, the Mayans were very big at overcoming the ego and going within, that the real teacher is always within, not what's outside, but what's inside. And that's why when you ask someone, well, how best can I go through 2012? What should I be doing on December 21st? And the answer is very simple. It's to be in faith, because the true teachings are within you.
Right. Right. Everything is within you, and you need to apply it. I would add here in December that's probably the meaning of Christmas, the birth of the light, the birth of the sun. Don't just worship somebody else. Don't just put all of your emotions to something external, but let it become something within you that grows, and you become a light to the world. I think that's been your message. Your website, after all, is Light News, right?
Yes.
Yeah, lightnews.org.
Yeah.
So folks, we're going to go on to some more of our classes, but we've been talking with Dr. Richard Jelicich. He lives in San Diego. His website is lightnews.org. And I hope you've enjoyed our discussion about a few highlights of our trip here in Mexico. And you certainly can contact me on my website and ask questions. You can contact Dr. Richard Jelicich as well. And if he has the answers, he'll give them to you. If not, he'll tell you how to get them. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thank you, Christopher.
All right.